visit to our childhood, but definitely very much related to what we're talking about this morning, so I appreciate everybody participating in that. It's good to see everybody this morning. I hope you have a Bible with you. If you do, clicker. If you do, be turning to Matthew chapter 7. This is the last one. This is the last sermon from our series in the sermons from the sermon. Some of you are going, thank goodness we're done. This is it. This is the last one. And this last section that we've been in, this is now the third week we've been in this last section, which ends with a series of warnings. All of those warnings, as I say every week, all those warnings delivered in pairs. You have two ways, two gates, two trees, two claims, and today, two foundations. The foundations that we're going to look at today, which we talked about, I mean, we sang about in the song Charlie read to us earlier about, they pull directly from the warning that's given just prior, the warning regarding the two claims. So these two are very much related to each other. I've given you some blanks to fill out in the bulletin if you would like to fill those out, if you find that helpful. But as I just mentioned, this final warning draws from the one before it. And as a reminder, the one before it, if you go back to verse 21, Jesus says this. He says, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter the kingdom of heaven, but the one who does the will of my Father. On that day, many will say to me, 'Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and cast out demons in your name and do many mighty works in your name?'" The implication being that they're claiming these incredible things, but they really did nothing but pay Jesus lip service. And he says the result of that is this: "Then I will declare to them, 'I never knew you. Depart from me, you workers of lawlessness.'" And I have labeled that in my notes, and that's where the blanks are in the handout, as a pointed indictment. An indictment of saying, if you hear the words of God, but you don't actually do them, you just say it with your mouth, you don't actually live out your relationship with God, you're going to be separated from God for all eternity. I mean, that's severe, right? I mean, that should get your attention. If you don't do them, you're going to be separated from God. So that's the pointed indictment. And it's very much like another account. I don't think it's the same time, but in Luke chapter 6, Luke records a time when Jesus taught something very similar to this, both from the perspective of this indictment to the two foundations. But in Luke 6, verse 46, he says simply, "Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and not do what I tell you?" And so again, very similar to Matthew chapter 7, but I again call that a pointed indictment. But from there, this last warning, I have labeled in my notes and on the handout as a practical illustration. This final warning is really an illustration of the third warning. The warning that says, hey, if all you do is claim to be my follower with your mouth and you don't actually go and live it out, you're going to be separated from me forever. He then illustrates it with a very practical illustration. And I call it practical because this is about where you choose to build a house, right? If you choose to build your house on the rock or you choose to build your house in the sand. I know nothing about building, okay? I know we've got Mike, who's a structural engineer. We've got Jared, who's a commercial builder. I know nothing about building. But I can understand this illustration because I understand that in order to have a successful structure, you have to have a good foundation. And I think all of us understand that. You know, regardless of what level we understand about construction, we understand the idea that it has to start with a good foundation. So I view this as a practical illustration. And Jesus says, in the translation that Charlie read, it began with the word "therefore." My translation says, "everyone then." Both of those mean the same thing. Means I'm concluding on what I just said. And Jesus says, "everyone then who hears these words of mine and does them will be like a wise man. So he said, hey, I just said, if you don't do what I say, you're going to be separated from God forever. Now, let me tell you what it's like if someone does what I tell them to do. He says, the ones who hear these words of mine and does them will be like a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain fell and the floods came and the winds blew and beat on that house, but it did not fall because it had been founded on the rock. And then, on the opposite side, everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them. So just like in the previous warning, he says, let me tell you what's going to happen to the one who doesn't do what I tell them to do. He says, it will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand, and the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell, and great was the fall of it. So this is, an illustration of either doing or not doing what God has asked us to do. And he illustrates that by saying we have a choice on what foundation we're going to build our life on. Now, as I just said, I don't know much about construction. But one thing I'm fascinated by, and I have been for many years since I was much younger, I am fascinated by really, really tall buildings. I love them because it just amazes me that they're possible. And when I talk about tall buildings, I mean really, really tall buildings. Like these buildings that are referred to as super skyscrapers. I find them fascinating. One of the really cool experiences of my life was, I mentioned several times that I've spent 5 years working in New York. I had two buildings that I worked out of. One of those buildings was directly across from the World Trade Center site. And this is a view from the office that I worked in. Now, by the end of the time I was there, this window was covered by another building. But for a number of years, I got to watch number one World Trade Center being built. I mean, when I first started there, you could just barely see the foundation. And by the time I left, it was complete. The outside was completed. And by the way, you can see the 9/11 memorial being built down there as well. But I got to watch that being built from that window, which was really cool. Even though I had no idea what they were doing, it was still really neat to see it. And then this picture I took just a couple of months ago when we were in New York of the completed structure, just amazing. 1,776 feet tall. Amazing to me that they can build buildings that tall. But the tallest building in the world is 1,000 feet taller than that one. Just incredible. But it was pretty cool watching that building get built. And then in 2016, I took my girls to New York, took a picture of them out this window from the 100th floor of the One World Trade Center. And then just back in December, we recreated the same window, so took the same picture. So that was really cool. But what I want to talk about for just a second is another super tall set of buildings. These are the Petronas Towers in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. And these were the tallest buildings in the world from 1998 until 2004. In 2004, late 2003, early 2004, they were eclipsed by Taipei 101. And then ultimately, everybody was eclipsed by the Burj Khalifa in Dubai. But 1998 to 2004, tallest buildings in the world, 1,483 feet tall, still the tallest twin towers in the world. But these two towers are built almost entirely out of concrete. It's my understanding that in Malaysia, steel is not readily available, and so not many buildings are built with steel, and so these two are built almost entirely out of concrete, which means they weigh a lot, okay? The two towers together weigh 600,000 metric tons. I learned all this from watching a documentary, which I found fascinating, and I went back and rewatched it this week. To make sure I remember the details. But the challenge with building two buildings this tall is figuring out where can we put them where the foundation is going to hold, okay? And they had picked out a site that originally was a vacant soccer field where they had decided this is where we're going to put these two towers. Well, they brought in these engineers from all over the world that came in, and they started digging all these bore holes into the ground. They said 400 holes to figure out can the can the bedrock underneath this site support these 600,000 metric tons? And what they found was that if they built the towers on the site that had been picked out by the city of Kuala Lumpur, the towers would ultimately fail, that they would fall over. And the reason why is because the site they had picked out, the bedrock underneath it was essentially a subterranean cliff. And so the bedrock on one end of the site was extremely strong, but the bedrock on the other end of the site was much deeper, and it was very porous and very brittle. And said, if we build this building where you guys have proposed to build it, we are afraid it's going to start leaning, and ultimately it's going to fall over, which would obviously be catastrophic. And so what they did was they moved it over quite a ways from the original location to a place where the bedrock was more uniformly deep. And then they essentially built their own bedrock through building an artificial, they call it a raft, a giant concrete raft that's many stories under the ground to make it where it wouldn't fail. Now, all I get from that, because I don't understand any of it, is that if you built on one place, the building's going to fail. And if you build in the other place, I mean, the buildings are still there. You know, all these years later, they're still there. They're still doing great. One place you're going to build it, it's going to fail. One place you build it, it's going to thrive. And that's essentially the story that Jesus is telling, right? You've got two options of where you're going to build your life, just like they had two options of where they were going to build these towers. You have two options of where you're going to build your life. And the key is, though, is how, you know, we got to build in the right place. So from this very simple illustration, I think what it should do is it should cause us, and this is the last blank, you're like, hey, he's already on point number three. That's right. This is going to be a longer one, though. But this one is, what I have in my notes is a personal interrogation. Because what's critical about this is determining, have I built my life in the right place? Right? I mean, Jesus had said in the previous warning, if you don't do what I say, you're going to be separated from God for all eternity. And in this one, which illustrates the previous one, he says, if you build your house in the wrong place, what's going to happen? It's going to be destroyed. Okay, so I have an option of where I'm going to build my life. How do I know if I built it in the right place? How do I know if the foundation that I have built my life on is sound? How do I know that? How do I know if it's sound? I was reminded as I was preparing for this, I don't know how many years ago this commercial was on the radio, but I used to find it interesting just because of sometimes on local radio, the commercials can be really over the top. The voiceover guys, you know, they're really pretty funny. But this one was a foundation repair company. And the ad would come on the radio, and it would be just like you'd hear thunder, you know, and rumbling, and you could hear rain. And then, you know, what they were doing was they were advertising for their company, but the way they would do it was they said, we want you to go out to our website and download this paper on, and they go, the 12 warning signs of a structure in, you know, in distress. And I never went out and downloaded the white paper, but I was thinking, do we know, in this case, this is a metaphor for our lives, do we know the warning signs? Can we accurately evaluate whether or not the structure of our lives is in distress? Is that something that we can do? And I think we should evaluate that from this story. So, first question that I have, again, this is an interrogation. I'm interrogating myself. I'm asking myself, have I built on the right foundation? First one, the simple question. The simple question, what is the rock foundation? Well, Jesus tells us in the illustration that the one who hears the words and does them is the one who builds on the rock, right? That's who builds on the rock. But I want to reference you to two other passages, both written by Paul. The first one, Ephesians chapter 2, you can turn here or you can just listen. But Ephesians chapter 2, beginning in verse 19, Ephesians 2, I reference a fair amount because it's a beautiful chapter about how God took us from this hopeless situation and rescued us. He took us from being separated and brought us together. And at the end of that presentation about how God has saved us, he says, so then, this is kind of the conclusion, you are no longer strangers. He'd earlier talked about how you're far off, you're separated, you're no longer strangers and aliens, but you are fellow citizens with the saints and members of the household of God, built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Christ Jesus himself being the cornerstone, in whom the whole structure being joined together grows into a holy temple in the Lord. In him you also are being built together into a dwelling place for God by the Spirit. So Paul says you're built on a foundation that the cornerstone is Jesus and includes the teachings from the apostles and the prophets, which are the words of God, right? So that's why in the bulletin I put that what is the rock foundation? It's Jesus Christ and his word. That's what the foundation is. Consider in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, the 1 Corinthian letter. Paul talking to the Corinthians about his work that he had done in Corinth. He says, according to the grace of God given to me, this is verse 10, like a skilled master builder, I laid a foundation and someone else is building upon it. Let each one take care how he builds upon it. For, listen to verse 11, no one can lay a foundation other than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ. He says, now if anyone builds on the foundation with gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, straw, meaning a foundation that's anywhere other than Jesus, each one's work will become manifest, for the day will disclose it, because it will be revealed by fire. And the fire will test what sort of work each one has done. If the work that anyone has built on the foundation survives, he will receive a reward. If anyone's work is burned up, he will suffer loss, though he himself will be saved, but only as through fire. Now, Paul uses a lot more complicated words and imagery than Jesus does, but he's essentially saying the same thing, right? If you build your life on Jesus, you're going to survive the test of fire. But if you build your life on anything else, you're not, right? So, again, what is the rock foundation? It's Jesus Christ and his word. And obviously, as Jesus says, it's the one who takes the word and does it. Now, I believe this is the key question, especially for those of you that are younger, okay? Because this is something that the world is going to beat you down with. And that is this question. Why would I build on the sand? Why would I build without a foundation? If you think about the nature of sand, is that really a foundation? No, it's not. And so the question then is simply, why would I build my life without a foundation? Or, you know, thinking about what the metaphor represents, why would I hear and not obey? But why would I build my life on the sand? Let's think about the illustration for just a second. So, knowing a little bit about the surroundings there in Israel and Palestine, in Israel you have a very defined rainy season and dry season. Okay, the rainy season is in the spring and the winter and spring months. The dry season in the summer and fall months. They get almost no rain in the dry season and get a lot of rain in the rainy season. And throughout Israel, you have these things called wadis, which are like dry creek beds, okay? And during the rainy season, they can become like rushing rivers, okay? I mean, these are dry creek beds that in the rain, when it rains a lot, they fill up, okay? And they even overflow their banks. And the banks are made of these kind of sandy deposits. But then in the dry months, when the water evaporates and it goes away, it leaves behind this kind of nice, flat sand. And so I think the illustration is playing to that, is saying, could you imagine someone who was a stranger who came in who doesn't understand our weather and said, hey, look, this is the perfect place to build a house. It's already level. And if they saw somebody building a house there, they'd be going, he's nuts. As soon as it starts raining, it's going to become a river and it's going to wash it all away. I think that's the point of the, that's how he's delivering it within the context. But again, back to the question for us is, well, why would I choose to do that? Why would I choose to build with no foundation? Why would I choose to build in a place where my house is going to be destroyed? And one of the, there's three things I want to talk about, but one of the big ones is because Satan in the world is going to try to convince you that it's a good foundation. Satan in the world is going, they're going to try to convince you that, hey, if I build my house on money, on the concept of having a lot of money, or on the idea of being successful, or, you know, whatever it is that I think is going to give me security, that I think is going to bring me happiness, that I think is going to make me content, Satan and the culture around us is going to be saying, build your life there. Then you'll be happy. Then you'll be content. Then you'll be successful. Then you'll be solid. And I said, as a, you know, younger, I'm getting close to 50, and I'm still dealing with that every day. You know, Satan telling me, hey, this is where you need to be. It's the illusion. It's the great lie that says, hey, you know, this is where you can build your life, and it's going to be a good foundation. It's going to cause you to be successful. The second reason why people would choose to build your life without a foundation is because it's easier. It's easier. Even the illustration bears this out. I didn't mention this earlier, but Jesus gives a very similar illustration in Luke. Again, I mentioned Luke earlier with the, you know, say to me, Lord, Lord, and not do what I tell you. The next couple of verses, Jesus gives essentially the same story of the wise man and the foolish man. But he adds this detail when he talks about the wise man who built on the rock. He said in verse 48 of Luke 6, who dug deep and laid the foundation on the rock. Again, thinking about the context, if I've got all this area of sand that's been leveled out by the rainy season, it's really easy to build a house there. It requires no work. It's already leveled out. But if I want to go up in the hills and I want to dig into the ground that's full of rock, that's hard work, right? It's hard work. Now, we live in Middle Tennessee. We understand the idea of digging in rocky ground, right? It's hard. It's hard to do. Even though I don't know much about construction, you know, we tried this project in our backyard. We succeeded, but I'll give you a picture with more context in a minute. We decided to build in our backyard some wood steps, wood and gravel steps that go up our yard to a hammock that we have. And this was kind of the design that I put together, which required digging into the ground. And I thought, hey, this is going to be a 1 or 2 day project, you know, weekend project, no big deal. And every step that I went trying to go up this hill, this is where I was trying to build up this hill, I found nothing but rock. And I mean, it was just, it ended up taking like 2 months rather than 2 days. And Sarah took a picture of me. This is what I spent my whole time doing, trying to dig enough space to get the hole. It was hard work. You know, there were plenty of times I'm like, you know, we really don't need steps up this hill. I mean, we don't need them. We don't need them at all. We'll just leave these two that are unfinished and just let it be, you know. But we kept at it, and all three of us worked hard and got the steps built. But the idea was, because the ground is so rocky, it was hard. It was really hard. You know, I heard a comedian one time say he was going to dig a koi pond for his mom as a present. And he said, eventually, we just built an above-ground koi pond because it was just so hard to dig in the rock. It's hard. And so, again, why would I choose to build my life, you know, on the sand where there's no foundation? Because it's easier. And thinking back to the same or similar question that we asked about the two ways and the two gates, you know, a lot of this is asking us to go against human nature. You know, part of the being willing to dig deep is that I have to be willing to go against human nature. I have to be willing to submit to someone else, be willing to be disciplined in the study of His Word, be disciplined in putting it into practice. Well, in all of that, I'm looking past what is natural to me, what I want to do. And I'm trying to do something that someone else wants me to do. So it's easier to build where there's no foundation. And the last one that I put down there was because I can't have both. You know, Jesus earlier in the Sermon on the Mount said you can't serve two masters. But man, we try, don't we? You know, I want a little bit of God, but I want a little bit of the other life too, right? I want to live in both places. But I can't do both. And so I go to the one that's easier because I can't have it both ways. And again, Jesus has said, you can't serve two masters. Next question, how do I build on the rock foundation? Well, Jesus gives us the answer to that. He says, the one who builds on the rock is the one who does what? The one who does what I tell them. So, in order to do what he tells you, what do you first have to know? What he tells us, right? You have to know the word. You know, I put down in the bulletin the idea of studying, you know, a section of scripture from the book of James, the book of James being such a practical kind of day-to-day living book, letter. And James says this in chapter 1, verse 19. He says, know this, my beloved brothers, let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak. Well, I believe human nature is that we want to be first, right? Human nature says, I want to be first. And if I'm speaking first, that means that I believe I have the greater understanding. I'm more important. But James says, no, you have to flip that. You have to listen first, speak second. So it's against human nature. I'm putting myself second. Then he says, be slow to anger, for the anger of man does not produce the righteousness that God requires. And he says, put away all filthiness and rampant wickedness. Now, all three of those things, speaking first, getting angry easily, fulfilling, you know, filthiness, rampant wickedness, all of those show that we're focused on ourselves. So James says, I want you instead to listen, which to listen means what? I'm focused on someone else. I want you to listen first, and then I want you to take all these things that show that you are focused on yourself, speaking first, getting angry easily, indulging your sinful nature. I want you to take those things, and I want you to put them away. And then, he says this, then receive with meekness. Meekness meaning I'm ready to be molded. I'm ready for someone to mold me. I'm yielding my authority. Receive with meekness the implanted word which is able to save your souls. So James says, you got to take self, throw it away, and you got to be listening and ready for the word of God to change you. To change you. So again, it's harder. Why is it harder? Because in order to do it, I have to put self to the side. I have to put self to the side. But it's not just about study. It's then about going and living. James says in the very next verse, he says, but be doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving yourselves. And he uses an illustration in the next few verses about if you listen, if you hear, and you don't do, it'd be like if you looked at your face in the mirror and then you immediately forgot what you look like, which is an absurd illustration to prove a point. To say that's what it would be like. And so the last question, and then the lesson will be yours, is what will happen when the storms of life rise against my house? You know, have I built on Jesus Christ and His Word, or have I built upon self? Have I put my house on my own shoulders? And what will happen depending on which one of those I have chosen? Well, Jesus earlier in the Sermon on the Mount said in verse chapter 6, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth. Don't put the emphasis of your life in the things of earth, where moth and rust destroy, where thieves break in and steal, where what? It's all going to go away. It's all going to be destroyed. But instead, lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And so the question of what will happen when the storms of life rise against my house, it depends on where I built it. Where have I built my house? Is it on the Lord, His teachings, and living the life that He wants me to live? Or have I built the house on self? That I can do it, I can make myself happy, I can be successful, I don't need anyone else. Where have I built my life? And that's, to me, the key question from this very, very simple illustration that Jesus gives about taking the Word of God and putting it in practice. If you're here this morning and you know that your life is built on a foundation that's full of cracks, it's failing, and you need the help of your brothers and sisters, that's one of the reasons why God has put us together, is to be encouragement to one another. And so if we can encourage you, if we can help you, if we can pray for you, that's what invitation is all about. But another reason why we offer the invitation is if there is anyone here who has never made that decision to put their faith in someone other than themselves, to put their faith in Jesus as one who could fulfill his promise to let us be with God for all eternity. If you've never made that decision, then there's no better time than right now to make that decision, to be baptized into Christ, ready to live your life for him. If there's anything we can do for you, please come while we sing our invitation song.